Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema with Benjamin Solak. I'm at home. I'm not on the road for like the first time in a month, so hopefully my voice sounds a little bit better because I paid a lot of money for this microphone, so hopefully you guys can tell the difference. If you can't, just tell me in the review so I can go return it, get my money back. I'll just start doing it from my laptop.
Wow. That was an intro.
I need financial advice from the people. They need to help me out. I can't listen to myself on the podcast. I go crazy. I don't know how you guys do it. That's why I have Ben here. Ben! Today, we're talking more interior defensive linemen for the summer scouting series here on the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. We got four more names. No, wait. We got five more names because you threw one on me this morning that I needed to watch.
No. You threw it on me in the last podcast.
Well, that's true.
You're an underclassman. We randomly grabbed Jordan Scott, and then I asked you... This morning, do you want to do him for today?
Or I couldn't be a liar. Today? Couldn't be a liar on the podcast, you know? I said that we were going to do upper and underclassmen. We got to get at least one in here. We know that there's going to be at least one underclassman defensive tackle drafted in the 2020 NFL draft.
You don't want to watch the wrong one.
Oh, you're right. We're only allowed to watch one. Hopefully we watch the right one. I'm actually going to let you decide, Ben, which guy we start out with.
Okay. Let's start out with a player who I feel very comfortable calling my guy, in the sense that, like, from long ago, I watched him and I said he's gonna like turn out to be a guy we talk about as a draft eligible player, and that's Leki Fotu.
Okay. I figured that you were gonna go to this. Yeah, I did. So I was reading up on them a little bit because there's not a ton of tape out there for these guys, and so I like to at least get a good background information on them before I get to whatever tape's coming out. I was able to watch a couple of Utah games. I found some cut-ups of just some Utah defensive line overall, so I was able to get to them. But interesting with him is that a lot of people were saying that he could have come out last year, and I found that he got a third or fourth round grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Board, and he was not happy with that. He thought that he would go a lot higher in the draft than that. So you probably watched a good deal of him last year, at least got a better look at him than I did last year. When you saw him last year, before we get to kind of what to look forward to him this year, did you think third or fourth round was about right? Like, if he came out last year, do you think that was the right target for him?
Yeah, because the thing is, you don't find 6'5", 320 dudes on the street.
He's
right?
Big, like, man. Like, that's an obvious.
Yeah, he's built to play the position, and this is a guy who is relatively new to the defensive tackle position, was originally tried out as an offensive lineman. He was a rugby guy who very late in high school started playing football, you know, seriously and competitively. He ends up being like a you know, first team all state sort of a dude in Utah and whatever. He's raw, and you acknowledge that off of his last year. I'm not surprised he got a third, fourth. That makes sense for him. But when you look at a guy from a physical tools plus the body of work he's put out for the experience that he has, Fotu, like, if Fotu had come out, Fotu would have been that guy that I would have been standing on the table for come round four if I were in a draft and being like, listen, let's bring this guy in. He's not going to make our team better this year. I know that. But, like, you know, 2-3 years down the road, I mean, if we trust our defensive line coach, we can make something out of him. Now, he stays in Utah. He stays with Kyle Whittingham. He returns on a fantastic defense that's returning a ton of talent.
It's going to be a really good Utah line.
Utah is my sleeper pick to win the Pac-12 this year. And Fotu has a great opportunity here because there's a lot of stuff to really like about his film to show out and wrap up those last things that we have there. Fotu is a guy who, long, powerful, explosive off the snap, wins with length, but there's questions about pad level and there's questions about pass rush plan, right? Mm-hmm. And that's he very much so reminds me as to what he is right now of what Ronnell Wren was coming out of Arizona State in the Pac-12 last year in terms of great body type, great muscle mass, excellent measurables. The flashes are there. The consistency and the discipline is not. Wren took a huge step forward. Fotu must show that he can as well. And I would probably even say I like Fotu right now better than I liked Wren coming out last year at this time.
Okay. You said coming out, so yeah, I was like, okay. All right.
Yeah. Like Wren with 1 year left of school versus Fotu with 1 year left of school, I probably like Fotu a little better. Wren had that trump card of explosiveness, mm-hmm. but I think Fotu is a more powerful player who's a little bit more polished right now. So there's work to do with him, but I like him a lot.
I think he is a more powerful player, and I like what he can do from a power standpoint. I just don't know how much more this guy is going to give me from a pass rush standpoint. Like, if he's not really bull rushing you and dominating you with his size and his power, I just don't see him being like a quick counter guy. He's not. I saw him on film try to pull off a couple of spin moves a couple of times in the games that I watched, and it's just very slow motion. Like, when this guy's got to move laterally or do things with any kind of agility with it, and understandably so. I mean, the dude's giant. He's like six, like you said, he's 6'5", like 330. Okay, he's a huge dude, so you wouldn't expect him to really be that great from an agility standpoint, but that's, I guess, what would make him, like, the jump for him being, okay, a preferred power player on the interior, which, I mean, I'm probably drafting between third and fourth round anyways, to a guy that I'm going to move up my board and say, okay, this guy's got some rare athleticism for his size. I just don't know if I see that with him. Obviously, that's the thing that I'm going to be watching the most. You talked about him being a little bit more polished, taking that next step, knowing what to do, and having a better pass rushing plan. I think that's going to be very vital for him, because with guys who aren't as quick laterally, who can't react with athleticism at their size, you really have to anticipate not only your first move, but if that doesn't work, what happens after that? You've got to anticipate your own counter as well. So the time wasted when it comes to pass rushing, when you're not really quick twitch, when you're not twitched up, it's very vital that you know what you're doing. And so that's kind of what I'm looking for with him going into this year, is that, okay, I know this guy's got power. I think that he could be a fourth round pick, maybe a late third, mid third, depending on how he produces this year. I know he's got that power, but what's that next step? Where's he going after that? So that's kind of my thoughts.
I would call this entire smattering of players that we're about to discuss today, with perhaps Lorenzo Neal, the Purdue kid, not included in that group, like, this umbrella is the could play themselves into a day two pick umbrella. You know what I mean? Like, I can talk myself right now, if, you know, Leckie Fotu gets this one thing, Raekwon Williams gets this one thing, Robert Landers gets this one thing, you know, solid day two value, and positive, that's where they're going to go. Neal might need a little bit more than that. I think Jordan Scott's already there, to be honest.
You want to talk about Neal? Who do you want to talk about
next?
Yeah,
let's talk about Neal.
Okay.
Let's talk about Neal.
First of all, this is what I was laughing at before we started the podcast, because mm-hmm. it's absolutely wild. Lorenzo Neal, defensive tackle from Purdue. He's a big boy. He is,
healthy,
I think,
young man.
6'3", 315. We got some bowling ball types that we're talking about on today's podcast. Him, yes. Landers, and Scott are like bowling ball dudes.
Well-fed young boys. Healthy.
That's a wonderful way to put it. Lorenzo Neal is the son of the former fullback, Lorenzo Neal, who played, and here we go, this is why I was laughing. Lorenzo Neal played 16 years in the NFL at fullback, his dad. Mm-hmm. He had, okay, all right, I'm just going to ask you, I'm going to make a game out of this. This guy made 4 Pro Bowls, was a first-team All-Pro twice, and he was part of the NFL's All-2000s decade team. Okay? You got all that in your mind?
Yeah, he was like an All-Pro fullback, right?
Okay, yeah, he was a fullback. How many career rushing yards do you think he had in 16 seasons with those accolades?
Okay. I know he played on a ton of different teams.
He did.
Okay. So he's probably from like 1995. So
he went 93 to 2009.
Okay.
Technically 2008.
1,200.
Lower.
Is he under 1,000?
He is under 1,000. Keep going.
Oh, God. Okay. 900.
Lower.
800.
807 career rushing yards. In the year 2000, okay, hold on.
So he's averaging 50.5 rushing yards a season, pretty much.
In the year 2000, he had 1 carry for negative 2 yards.
Okay, so 50.5 is better than my 16. He's averaging 3.1 yards per game he played.
his first season that he played, his rookie year. Listen, oh my God, this, all right, this even got more astounding. His rookie season in 1993, he played in two total games, Ben. Two.
Okay. Two.
He got 21 carries.
Nice.
And got 175 yards, the most that he ever got in 1 year.
That's like a fifth of his total. No, it's more than a fifth, if I'm doing my math correctly. Yeah, it's a little bit more than a fifth of his career rushing total.
So
right
he
there.
Played in two games.
In two games.
With 21 carries and 175 yards. He then played 16 games in the other 15 seasons, other than one in which he played 13. Okay? And he never got more than 175 yards in a single year after doing it in two games in 1993.
How many articles do you think were written between 93 and 94 that was like, listen, Lorenzo Neal, next big thing for the New Orleans Saints, man. I mean, like, those two games clearly showed power rushing ability. He's going to have 16 games this year. They're going to integrate him as part of the offense. And then he rolled out and like, carried the ball five times.
He was also an NCAA Wrestling All-American in 1992, so... Lorenzo Neal, man, put together quite the athletic career here. I'm marveled at this man. In awe at the size of this lad. In absolute unit. Speaking of absolute unit, his son, Ben, take it away.
So Lorenzo Neal, as we said, is well-fed. He is a big and powerful boy, and it's weird because Lorenzo
Sorry. Lorenzo Neal blocked for 1,000 yards, like blocked for the then 1,000 yard running back who was on their team in 11 straight seasons.
Yeah, I mean, like when he was in San Diego in the early 2000s, he was the fullback for LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah,
right?
from 2003 to 2007. Yes,
that's what I remember him as, the fullback who made the Pro Bowls while blocking for LT. Like that, and that's like 05 or something like that. But like that's. You know, that's my era. But anyway,
Anyways. His
son, defensive tackle, who we're talking about in this podcast.
I don't know. We got a lot of info on the other Lorenzo Neal. Yeah, maybe we could just do the whole podcast on him.
Just like live research on the show. Neal is like I said, large, and it's odd because he's built like a two-gapper. He's got that sand in his pants. He has the ability to hold the line of scrimmage. But he's a decent to good penetration player upfield against the run. I think he does a good job of breaking running constantly. He does a good job of leveraging a half man, sticking within his gap, getting upfield, and turning running backs immediately into help. Now, the Purdue defense is not full of draftable players, but Neal clearly stands out as a guy who does a really good job filling his run fits. So even though he's a bigger guy and I think he's got some length and he's got really good anchoring mass, he doesn't just sit on blocks. As a run defender, he really gets into gaps. He penetrates. He's able to get upfield. He's got a first step off the line to slant into a gap. I think he does a good job crossing face quickly. So I like that about him a lot. Powerful, some decent quickness. None of it translates to a pass rush at all. And
nope.
You wonder the extent to which Purdue is even asking him to rush the passer, because it seems like he's very willing to just sit and establish the depth, establish the peak of the pocket, something that we talked about on the previous podcast. Neal has no pass rush move that I can really identify on tape as like, this is a go-to. I've seen him try to hit a snatch trap and he tries to rip, but he is not a cornering player. He will not be able to bend off a half man. And so you really need him to just have a bull rush or a snatch trap, and they just don't exist right now. He's upright. He doesn't really look to generate rolling power. He's just constantly reading run and then trying to get a hand up in the pass lane, and that's it for him right now.
Yeah.
And so a guy who, if he gets a Senior Bowl bid, which is not a given in a defensive tackle class, a senior class that has a lot of names, if he gets a Senior Bowl bid, I'm sure he'll get a Shrine Game bid, but a Senior Bowl bid would be huge for him because he's going to have to show that he can provide some sort of rush value from the one technique. That's where he's going to play at the next level. And he has value because I think he's a plus run defender. That's good. And there are teams in the league who are very happy to have their one technique be a plus run defender, play for two downs, and that's it. There's a role for him. But Neal's not a high-ceiling player unless we're going to see more from the pass rush in 2019.
Yeah, I think that's the way to put it. He's just not a high-ceiling player. I was just watching a couple of the games of his, and the Ohio State game was kind of standing out to me as I was watching it. I'm like, I'm just waiting for this guy to do something. Something. Like, do something. Like, he was trying to stunt to the outside. He was trying to go straight up. He was trying to do little moves here. I think he's got decently fast hands for a big man, but I didn't think his get off the ball was overly impressive, especially considering there's these other guys that we're going to talk about today and just in the class in general, they're a lot better at getting off the ball than he is. And, you know, when you have the body type that he does, I guess he's not really shorter. I think he's about 6'2", 6'3", but, you know, I'm hoping this guy, especially because of the body type that he is, I'm hoping he's firing off the ball in every play, and I just didn't see it a lot. And so with the lack of big-time first step to penetrate up the middle, like you were talking about there, kind of a lack of pass rush moves, really just did not make a big impact there. He was just kind of a guy. He was a guy along the defensive line that I was watching play, and that was about it. I just did not see a lot of standout plays from him, and I just didn't think it was in his game. Unfortunately for him as well, he tore his ACL in the season finale that they were playing, I think, Indiana. And so he's coming back from that now, and he might not even be ready to start the season. And so it's hard for him because that's, again, that's something that I'm looking for him to be a little bit better laterally. I'm looking for him to make a difference and move from one side to the other, find the space, get through gaps, jump two things, and that all involves you having a healthy lower body. And not only a healthy lower body, a confident lower body. And so I'm not going to sugarcoat it. That's going to suck for him going into this season, because he really needed this season to be one that he could hang his hat on and say, hey, look how I've improved. This is my best season yet. And like you were saying there, talking about the area of him becoming a pass rusher, because I do think he's an all right run defender. I think that he's viable. I think that he's dependable, but I didn't see like domination from him as a run defender. You know, I didn't see like something like that where you're overdrafting this guy because of how good he can anchor and things like that. And then we combine that with the fact that he didn't bring a lot of the pass rush. I just don't love it. You know what? Dead ass, move this guy to fullback like his dad.
Here we go, brother.
Do it.
320 pounds, fourth and goal from the one.
Jim Nagy.
Do you have any questions?
Jim Nagy, send this man a Senior Bowl invite for fullback. Do it.
Yes, Trevon Wesco part two.
Do it. All right, who are we talking next?
Would you want to talk about really positive plus run defenders who are more than just, you know, like decent guys? They generate tackles for losses, and they generate tackles at the line of scrimmage, and they hold up against double teams? Because I'm ready to talk about Jordan Scott.
Jordan Scott.
Trevon Scott.
The nose tackle for the Oregon Ducks. He wears number 34. He is thick AF. And his nickname is Mini Fridge. Okay,
his nickname is Mini Fridge, and he's my hero. And I will say exactly what I said about him to definitely Kyle, maybe more people, when we were just like randomly talking 2020 prospects like a couple months ago, I think it was. Jordan Scott is a cube, right? The dude's actually as thick as he is wide as he is tall. Like he's just an equilateral polygon.
I didn't know what you said at first. I thought you said a Q, like the letter Q, and I was like, all right, I'm trying to follow you here. And then I realized you said cube, and that's really funny.
He is.
Ben, you're kind of funny. Don't let anybody tell you you're not funny at all. You're kind of a funny guy.
I do my best. Jordan Scott is an actual, like, mini fridge, like, is appropriate.
The dude you're not emphasizing the O at the end of his name enough.
I don't know if that's how it's pronounced.
It's Jordan.
Is that how it's pronounced?
I don't know, but if his parents wanted him to be named Jordan, they would have just named him Jordan. They would have just named him Jordan. They didn't name him Jordan. They named him Jordan.
But you don't know if they named him that.
He's the Don of the D-line.
Scott is a very – you said we got some bowling ball types. The dude's actually a bowling ball. I mean, he's 6'1", 335.
He's got his own orbit.
Dude, he's got the thickness with as many C's as you want. I mean, you can't – there's one player I've seen successfully move Jordan Scott off of his spot, and it's Nick Harris, the center out of Washington, who we talked about with Jordan, actually, on the offensive line pod.
Jordan?
I can't even handle that question right now. I mean, Scott went up against some, like, you know, draftable centers across the course, like in the Pac-12, like he went up against Nathan Eldridge at Oregon State. He went up against Jesse Burkitt at Stanford. He went up against Brian Allen at Michigan State. The dude can't.
Brian Allen, my boy.
I mean, he's the power that he brings is unbelievable. And then for 335 pounds to be able to get off the line of scrimmage and into gaps as quickly as Scott's able to get into, I mean, he's a problem. Because he can establish a half man, and then if he gets underneath your armpit, if he gets into your side, I mean, he controls where you go. He has unbelievable power just throughout the frame, lower body and upper body, great natural leverage, and he just chucks guys, right? And so when he's in a true zero technique, two gapping sort of a situation, I mean, he's built for it. But this isn't going to be a guy who's limited to that, because you clearly see the ability to work a rush plan, because he's good at getting to a half man, and then he has tremendous power. He collapses the pocket. He threatens pocket depth and integrity, and he moves quarterback off his spot. It's what opens up things for his edge defenders. It's exactly what you want from a zero technique rusher sort of a guy. I mean, I think Scott is super sky high ceiling. I mean, this is a freshman All-American. This is the keystone of the Oregon defense, all Pac-12 for the past 2 years. I think junior year, we should expect all the same. I mean, he's thrilling to me.
Yeah, certainly what stood out to me right away with Scott is, you know, right away, almost I watched three games of his, and in all three games, basically the first snap, you realize that he gets off that ball so damn quick. And after that, it's not just that he gets out of his stance and off the ball very quickly. The hands come up immediately. He's got his – and that's the thing, too. There's a lot of these guys who have a good first step, but if you don't know what you're doing with your hands after, when you're combining your hands to your first step, sometimes you're just like bowling your body straight into the offensive lineman, and they're going to be able to redirect you, right? Because you're just making it easy for them. You're getting off the ball, and you're not doing anything with it. Scott combines a great first step with lower leverage because it's his body type. It's very natural for him. And he gets his hands up so quick that as he is jumping off the ball immediately, the second the ball is snapped, those hands are going up. He's knocking those offensive linemen off balance. He's getting them on their heels. He's moving them around. He's making an impact, because that disruption up the middle is absolutely, like you said, a plus for the players around him. He might not be making a ton of plays himself, but interior disruption is a big part of an overall defensive game plan, especially in the box. And so watching Scott, that's the first thing I noticed, is that how well he married the speed with his feet and his burst with the speed in his hands, getting his hands up. He very much knows what to do with it.
He's a phone booth winner, right? Like he was
yes,
the guys who in the phone booth.
So Jordan Scott is who I wanted Dalen Mack to be.
Oh, wow. I mean, like, I didn't like Mack at all, so I didn't even...
Right, but this is who I wanted Dalen Mack to be.
Sure. Mack was a five-star recruit, so everybody wanted
Correct.
Dalen Mack
right,
to
because
be.
Because here's why. Both of these guys, and this is a very common thing with recruiting. Recruiting, if you're an interior player and you can get off the ball at a big size, you're going to be at least a four-star player. That's just the way that recruits
Scott
are...
Scott was three-star.
What'd you say?
Scott was three-star.
Well, then that's criminally underrated.
Yeah, and then he's a freshman All-American.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, that's somebody screwing up. Because that's the thing.
Mario Cristobal, baby.
If you get off the ball like that at that kind of a size, it's easy to see. But the thing with Dalen Mack is that he could burst. He didn't do anything with it. And I was a really frustrating part of him, because I continued to watch him and showed great burst off the line. But Scott is what I wanted Dalen Mack to be, not only at a ceiling potential of what he can do with that burst, but also at a consistent level too, because he did a lot more than Mack did. So that's kind of that was my thoughts as I was watching Scott.
Yeah, no, and like I said, phone booth winner, and that's where you talk about the Dalen Mack thing. Like, if you're going to have a guy be impactful from the zero tech position, he's right over the centers. So he's going to be able to see the ball, and he's going to be able to initially win hands because the center's got to snap it. So he's right over, he's going to see it, know the timing, and then also the center's snap hand is going to be behind the snap, right? It's going to be behind your initial hand, so you're able to win hand positioning right away. If you can use that advantage, being the first guy off the ball and having the initial hand set to constantly win in the pass rush, that's where you're going to bring value as a zero technique guy, because Scott may be able to like play the three tech and be fine, but he's never going to be as good as most NFL three techs who are playing at 290. Like, he's just got 45 more pounds. It's not going to be his game. He doesn't have great length, you know. So he's going to have to win his rushes from the zero to the one technique position, and he can. And you see it consistently on the Oregon film. So it's thrilling stuff.
Raekwon Williams, which
you're not pronouncing the A-E, Raekwon. You're not doing it right.
Am I not?
I don't know. I was trying to do the Jordan thing.
Yeah, well, it didn't work here because I'm saying Raekwon correctly. But it's funny because this Raekwon, we talked about another Raekwon yesterday, which was spelled Raekwon. And today we're talking about another Raekwon, and it's Raequan. So yeah. Raekwon Williams, he's defensive tackle at Michigan State. He's got a really cool story. If you guys don't know about his story, he grew up on the west side of Chicago, and his journey through football, it was really interesting. Coming from the west side of Chicago, really, he had a big family. didn't have a lot of opportunities, said that he just loved playing sports like by himself in the yard. And he literally got into football because I think when he was around middle school age, he was like throwing a football by himself, like against his garage or something, or maybe just like up in the air. And a youth football coach was like driving around and saw him, was like, "Hey kid," like saw his size because he's a huge dude. And he's like, "Hey kid, you wanna actually play like real football?" And he was like, "Yeah." And so like that's literally how Raekwon Williams is playing the game of football. Like it just happened. It was a weird kind of like coincidence thing.
Shockingly similar to what happened to me in football, Trevor. Of course. People saw my size. Yes. And they're just like, "Wow, please come play."
Yeah. So I mean, he kind of had a really interesting journey throughout high school and then going to a private Catholic school to get more looks with athleticism or with athletics, and then ended up at Michigan State. He's a guy who's I was actually a really good basketball player as well. So you can kind of see that a little bit in how well he moves laterally as well as horizontally up the field. I don't know. What did you think about Williams when you watched him? I thought that there was a lot to like, but I this dude's so raw. Is he not? Do we see the same thing?
Yeah, I do want to make one point on his bio because you brought up, you know, like you said, he grew up west side of Chicago, sort of a guy like a huge family. Williams actually nearly left school to return home because he had two family members die in two separate shootings in the early part of his career at Michigan State, the early part of his attendance there.
Yes.
He had a brother and a cousin pass away, and so yes, he wanted to go. And his mother was adamant that he remain in school, that he graduate, that he make something for himself, that he not come back home. He kind of, you know, get out of where they were, which is, you know, that's a lot to carry. And I think it really speaks to what you got in Williams and how important the game is to him because of what it means to him and his family. I do agree that he's raw. Williams is a guy that I actually watched a while ago because I drafted the Michigan State defense in our first unit draft. He fits the mold, right? Long and quick. Like his best reps, he's lined up in the A gap, he ends up in the B gap. He's lined up in the B gap, he ends up in the C gap. Like he really does a good job crossing face at the line of scrimmage on these twists, on these stunts, opening up things for defenders. And so he's really, really solid when you're asking him to get across face, quickly challenge a guy, force an offensive lineman immediately into recovery positions. He's consistently the first guy off the ball. He very regularly wins that initial angle. And when the hands are correct, powerful.
Yes.
Trevor. Hands aren't often correct.
That's the thing.
He's got some height to him. He's 6'4", and he pops up at the snap. Right now, if we don't fix leverage, we're always going to be waiting for more from Raekwon Williams. His leverage is what I would call like a critical mass issue, right? Like if we can't fix this, we're bursting. The bubble's broken. He needs to keep his pads lower. He needs to gain more depth and less height off of his first step. And that timing, that process will make it easier for him to locate hands on a chest and then for him to work his swipe and to work his club rip, which are good sequences when he's able to hit them consistently, but they're very frequently too late because he's upright. He allows his chest to be taken by the offensive lineman, and then he strikes at a shoulder when he should be striking at an elbow, right? Mm-hmm. So the strike is behind timing-wise, and that's because that first step doesn't gain depth. Mm-hmm. He gains height. He comes upright. So that's a huge issue right now. If we can get that ironed out, we're cooking with grease. But right now, like, it's you just, that's circled in red. Like, you need to learn how to get through the chute, brother. And if you don't, I mean, I have nothing to work with here.
And he's an interesting, and when I say interesting, I mean both fascinating with a lot of potential and also frustrating guy to watch because he's just flailing right now. The ball is hiked and he's flailing. The hands are flailing. The lever, he pops straight up, like you said. But then once he gets into those hand fights, those hand-to-hand combat things with offensive linemen, he wins them. He wins them a lot. But there's no plan there. There's not a lot of technique in what he does. There's just not a lot of, I'll say, poetry in what he's doing. It's very chaotic, and it needs to be more poetic what he's doing. It's got to be smoother. It's got to be something that you can see him go from one move to the other, that it's from snap to move to execution to moving by to making a play in the backfield. And that's what a lot of the cases are with these interior linemen who make these plays, who end up getting the stats, who end up getting drafted high. That's what they've got to do. They have these plans to them. And right now, Williams just doesn't have a plan. I will say that what Williams does have is a motor. The dude is going on all
that
cylinders.
Whole Michigan State defense,
at
brother,
all time.
They act like they don't get fed all week, man. They are something.
Williams is definitely on the forefront of that. I think he's going crazy. And I think that you definitely, when you learn about a kid's background, that has a lot to do with it. And you find out how kind of how much joy this kid has just to play the game and in a lot of different other things. You can see that he really does love to play and he gives it his all, and that's just the attitude that he has for it, because it has to do with where he came from and where he is now because of it. And so you just see a motor that never quits with him. And it's when you know that he's from the west side of Chicago and that playing football was not something that was always in his sights. It's not something that he grew up thinking that he was going to be a star doing. You know, he thinks that he's fortunate to be doing what he's doing, playing it at Michigan State, having a chance at the NFL. And I think that you see that joy and you see that motivation a lot when he's playing throughout his tape. The effort is there and you love it, because there's not always that, like, that kind of effort is not a standard for defensive linemen. Like, these dudes are giant humans carrying around a lot of weight, getting beat up on every snap. A lot of them get sluggish, and I get it. I understand it. This guy's not a guy who gets sluggish almost at any time. And so,
I get sluggish walking to the kitchen, so he's like 315.
So this is why you love a lot of things about him, but I think that you're right. There's going to come a time to where you can't go, man, but we love his effort. Man, but we love his potential. You got to see it. At some point, you got to turn the corner. And I think for a baseline of what he brings, the NFL is going to like him. But man, if he's going to get drafted high, like you talked about that second round there, he just has to get better.
NFL likes that mold. That's the thing. It's like they're going to see his length and his quickness.
And his motor with it. Those are the things that he's going to write down. And they're going to think, okay, at the very floor, we're getting a guy who could work his ass off, right? So like that's something that NFL teams really like to see when guys have high floors. And then they can go, okay, we can work with the rest. We can teach him the rest. So that might be the case with him. But in order for him to crack that day two range, we got to see more this year with him at Michigan State. Let's finish up talking about Robert Landers from Ohio State. Ben and I talked about this before the podcast. Ben thought he was going to have a hot take by saying that Robert Landers was better than Draymond Jones last year. However, those who listened to this podcast last year and even going into the season know that I had Robert Landers above Draymond Jones in my summer scouting series last year. So your boy was first on it.
Who liked Draymond Jones better? Me or you? Where'd you have Draymond?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. Were you super low on him?
I was quite low on
Draymond. Well, how many guys did you rank, though?
Like 200.
Okay, I think I did 200 as well. I probably had Draymond higher than you did.
Yeah, I didn't like Draymond, so maybe you're even saying more by saying you like Landers better than Draymond. But here's the thing, Trevor. One of them plays a run defense, and it's not Draymond Jones. And Landers is not lacking as a pass rusher. Like, Draymond Jones is like, oh, he's quick, penetration player, length. Yeah, he's also, like, bad at it. Robert Landers is a highly effective penetration player. I think he's probably – like, I think I like Jordan Scott better. But in terms of the seniors that we've watched, I think Landers is the one I like the most today on this podcast. As a penetration player, Landers – regularly the first player off the ball, effective head up or as a shade, right? And so he gets into gaps, whether he's lined up as a 0-2 technique, a 4 technique, never is a 4 technique, 0-2 technique, or if he's a 1-3 technique, right? So if he's in a gap or if he's head up, he's immediately getting off the ball, quickly establishing a half-man relationship. Tremendous hand placement. He doesn't have the same power that like a Jordan Scott or even like a Lorenzo Neal does. I just don't think he's that much of a unit, but he does have sufficient power to immediately challenge the depth of the pocket. He's got a really good vision too, so he's great. I think acknowledging I'm an interior rusher, if I don't immediately win my rush, it means I'm most likely to affect this play by the quarterback coming to me, and does a really good job reading quarterback set points, reading a mess in the backfield. I watched the TCU film. TCU gave him a ton of looks, was regularly at the correct leverage point, good hustle player as well, willing to chase plays down the field, be a backside guy, you know, retrace screens, all of the 9 yards. And then you have a guy who I think is tremendous, best skill of any of the players that we've probably talked about today, at shucking blocks. He's really, really good at disengaging himself physically at or near the line of scrimmage to present in a gap. And that's a really underappreciated thing. Like we talk about like hand placement and power. Well, how do those traits manifest themselves into skills? Robert Landers has the skill of disengaging himself from heavy contact, from nasty contact, in the mess, in the brush pile, in the thicket, and presenting color in the gap such that he at least slows down the runner, if not getting him down himself. And that's a skill that immediately jumps off the film. It's married to his traits of power, of quickness, and of balance, and it makes him an effective interior defender because he rarely is giving up holes because of his ability to present in gaps. I think it's a tremendous skill.
Yeah, my two favorite things that I wrote about him when I was watching his film is that he gets off the ball very quickly, And after he gets off the ball, he's very slippery. Like you said, he's not locked up. And if he is locked up, it ain't for very long. I think that he's got kind of shorter arms, but I think that makes it a lot easier for him to navigate his hands, get off blocks, just be really annoying, if you will, to some of these interior offensive linemen who think that they have a hand on him, but he's moving his hand a little bit down. Now all of a sudden he's disengaged. Now he's by you because he's got a good swim move and he's got a good change of direction as well. And so him and Scott, I think they are my favorite, certainly, that we watched today. They do a lot of the same things very well. I think they've got very quick hands. They've got that good burst out initially out of the hole from really close interior spots, whether it's like straight up zero or one technique guys. And so I'm a big Landers fan. I liked him a lot last year. I thought that he was too much kind of taken off the field for a rotation. I thought Ohio State was kind of getting cute with some of the other guys they were playing. I'm hoping they play him a lot more, even though Ohio State's just a giant talent factory. So who knows how many guys they're going to rotate in this year. I really liked what I saw from Landers. I was a big fan of his. So five guys. We got to five guys here on this podcast. Boy, we went pretty long on this one. You guys normally like it when we go longer on podcasts. If you don't, I guess let us know. But it seems like y'all download
stop
and
listening.
Listen to all this stuff the further
Leave.
That we go into
enemies
these things.
Enemies of the show.
The enemies of the show list is enemies something that we've got to keep track of. Do we know which guys we're watching tomorrow?
Yeah, I texted them to you.
Do you have that was basically me saying code of do you have them up?
McTelvin Aguin, Arkansas. Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina. Benito Jones, Ole Miss. Neville Gallimore, Oklahoma.
Neville Gallimore is a very cool name. I kind of like
Neville Gallimore. It feels like he's been at Oklahoma and draft eligible for 78 years.
Yeah, and I'm really excited to get to Kinlaw because a lot of people have asked me if I've seen him yet, and I have
Another
not.
Healthy young man.
So,
this time I actually mean it.
Very excited to get to those guys. That's going to be Thursday's podcast, right? It's Thursday. Yes, it's Thursday. Then after that, you guys know what it is. It's Fan Friday. We're getting closer to training camp. We're getting closer to the NFL kicking off. And so if y'all have any like NFL related questions as well, I know we do a lot of scouting questions. You guys always bring it with the weird questions and we love it. But if you got any training camp questions or even like, Ben, do you play fantasy football? I don't even know.
Oh God, poorly. Like I participate in leagues as like a body to be killed.
Well, I'm good at fantasy football. I actually win fantasy football things. So if you guys also have fantasy football questions, like fire them away because they often I feel like fantasy football questions are cool because they're a different way to look at how teams might be set up. Like if you look at it through a fantasy football lens, you might go, oh yeah, okay, so they're going to utilize this guy a little bit more. And then like you can actually bring it to a practical knowledge of like the depth chart and how a season's going to go and everything like that. So I'm a big fan of fantasy football questions. So even if Ben's not good at fantasy football, you can still ask us fantasy football questions. We'll try to help you.
Just do whatever I don't say.
Yeah, I mean, that's a viable strategy, not only in fantasy football, but...
Okay, wow. So, good show.
We're going to have fun the rest of the week. You guys stick around. Until then, keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.